श्री माँ भगवता महाप्राण की जाय, शील प्रभुपाद की जाय, गो प्रेमानंदी ऑल ऑफ द बॉडीज ऑल ऑफ श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरांगा ऑल ऑफ श्री गुरु गौरांगा ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायण नमस्कृत्य नारायण चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नैस्तप्रयेषु भद्रेषु नित्यां भागवत सेवया भागवतीर्थां श्लोके भक्तिर्भावति नैष्टिके Before signing the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the personality of God of Narayan, unto Narayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering services unto pure devotees, all that is troublesome in the heart becomes practically restored, and transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord, whose praise of transcendental hymns comes into being established as an irrevocable fact. The reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 3, Text 23. Deva, Deva,
Deva,
Deva,
Deva,
Adineshu,
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 Kameshu,
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 Deva Adina,
Deva Adina,
Deva Adina,
Deva Adina,
Svayam,
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 Humam,
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 Ka,
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 Visrambita,
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 Yogina,
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 Yogeshwaram,
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 Manuvrata,
Anuvrata,
Anuvrata, Daivadineshu Kameshu,
Daivadineshu Kameshu,
Daivadineshu Kameshu,
Daivadineshu Kameshu,
Daivadina Svayam Pumam,
Daivadina Svayam Pumam,
Daivadina Svayam Pumam,
Daivadina Svayam Pumam,
Govishrami, Ko Vishrameta Yogina,
Ko Vishrameta Yogina,
Ko Vishrameta Yogina,
Ko Vishrameta Yogina,
Yogeshwaram Manuvrata,
Yogeshwaram Manuvrata,
Yogeshwaram Manuvrata,
Yogeshwaram Manuvrata,
Bhaivade, Daivadeshu Kameshu,
Daivadeshu Kameshu,
Daivadina Svayam Pumam,
Daivadina Svayam Pumam,
Govishrambita Yogina,
Govishrambita Yogina,
Govishrambita Yogina,
Govishrambita Yogina,
Yogishwaram Anuvrata,
Yogishwaram Anuvrata,
Yogishwaram Anuvrata,
Yogishwaram Anuvrata,
Yeah.
Supernatural force, and thus his sense enjoyment is also under the control of that supernatural force. No one therefore can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense. Nobody therefore can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense activities, but one who has become a devotee of the Lord by rendering devotional service. Please repeat. Every living entity is controlled by a supernatural force.
Every entity is controlled by a supernatural force.
And thus his sense enjoyment is always on. And thus his sense enjoyment is also under the control of his supernatural force.
And thus his sense enjoyment is also under the control of his supernatural force.
No one therefore can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense activities.
No one therefore can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense activities.
But one who has become a devotee of the Lord.
But one who has become a devotee of the Lord.
By rendering devotional service.
By rendering devotional service.
Prabhupada by Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, no one can understand the transcendental birth and activities of the Lord. The same fact is herein corroborated. No one but one who is enlightened by the devotional service of the Lord can understand the difference between the Lord's activities and those of others. One who is enlightened by the devotional service of the Lord can understand the difference between the Lord's activities and those of others who are controlled by the supernatural force. The sense enjoyment of all animals, men and demigods within the purview of the material universe is controlled by the supernatural force called the Prakriti, or Devi Maya. No one is independent in obtaining sense enjoyment, and everyone in this material world is after sense enjoyment. Persons who are themselves under the control of supernatural power cannot believe that Lord Krishna is not under any control beyond himself in the matter of sense enjoyment. They cannot understand that his senses are transcendental. In the Brahma Samhita, the Lord's senses are described as omnipotent, i.e., with any sense he can perform the activities of the other senses. One who has limited senses cannot believe that the Lord can eat by his transcendental power of hearing and can perform the act of sex life simply by seeing. The controlled living entity cannot even dream of such sense activities in his conditional life. But simply by the activities of bhakti yoga, he can understand that the Lord and his activities are always transcendental. And the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 18:55, Bhakti amam abhijananti yavanyas chas mukhaktata. One cannot know even a fraction of the activities of the Lord if he is not a pure devotee of the Lord. Divadineshu kameshu devadina swayam pumam ko vishrambeta yogina yogishvara manuvrata. Every living entity is controlled by a supernatural force, and thus his sense enjoyment is also under the control of that supernatural force. No one therefore can put his faith in Lord Krishna's transcendental sense activities by one who has become a devotee of the Lord by rendering devotional service. Om Agnyad Marandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshushunmilatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manomvistam Shabdam Yenam Bhutale Swayam Rupagata Mayam Dhatati Sambhatandigam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Girada Shiva Sri Gaura Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a very important verse to understand. That is why the Srimad Bhagavatam is compiled in 10 cantos. The first 9 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam are to bring the living entity to the point of understanding the transcendental nature of the Supreme Personality of God. So in the beginning of study of Krishna, we should always be very careful how we approach the pastimes of the Lord. For instance, you'll find that in the first cantos of Bhagavatam, they particularly deal with the universal form. This is very important to understand, because the nature of the mind is always to be doubtful. That is the nature of the mind. Everyone is always doubtful. Why, Peter? Why are we doubtful? Anybody know why we get doubtful? Ravi, why do we get doubtful? Is it because we sleep and during class that we get doubts? Keep your head up. Keep straight. Because I tell you, if people start sleeping, I'm going to get a water bottle and throw it at them. I'm going to get one of these squirrel things. Squirrel. So it's very hard to speak when people are not even interested in here. And sleeping means no interest. When Ketananda Maharaj asked Prabhupada how we would find our suttas in our movement, if they go around all the classes and those who are sleeping, they're the suttas. Put them out in the field to work. So, therefore, why are we doubtful? Why do we get doubts? Because of, a little bit more specific, huh? Because of the flickering mind. But particularly, why do we get doubts? Huh? Because we're limited. I'm trying to relate it to the actual verse, because it's very clearly said. Because of supernatural force. That's why. Because of supernatural force. So, the living entity, Krishna says, Mayavamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana Vimasasthani Indriyani Prakriti Kani Karshita. That the living entities, they are my part and parcels, Krishna says, and they are in me and they are mine. But due to conditional life, they are struggling very hard with the 6 senses, which include the mind. So the struggle for existence is predominantly from the mind. The mind is the, Prabhupada said, the central reservoir of all mischievous activities in the material world. It is the Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur puts it very nicely, that the living entity has given over has given over all authority to the mind. The soul has given over the authority to the mind. And this authorization is that we are allowing the mind to be our controller. The mind and the senses are the creation of illusion. That's why Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the living entity is conditioned. So we are in a certain condition. And that condition has to be understood very, very clearly, because unless you understand your condition, how are you going to get out of it? How are you going to get out of it? How can you get out of a condition if you don't know what condition you're in? It's ridiculous, isn't it? Suppose you said that, I'm trying to get out of here, and someone said, well, where are you? He said, I don't know where I am, but I'm really trying to get out. You see? Suppose you rang me up and you said to me, oh, you know, I'm really trying to get out of this situation. I'm really having difficulty. I said, where are you? He said, I haven't got a clue. And I said, well, how do you know you need to even get out? If you don't even know where you are, then how do you even know you need to get out? Isn't it? It's only logic, isn't it? You're not going to be enthusiastic to get out of something if you don't even know where you are to begin with to get out. Isn't it? Logic. So similarly, you're not going to make any effort. You're not going to make any effort unless there is some reasonable cause to make that effort. So therefore, one has to be reasonable. And reasonable means to understand what is my predicament. Therefore it says, atata brahma jignasya. The word atata means now. And it's a very important word, because that word can only be used in the human form of life. In all other species of life, that word is not applicable. That atata brahma jignasya. Atata means now that you've reached this plane of human consciousness. Now, Brahma Jignasya. What is Brahma Jignasya? What is Jignasya? Atata Brahma Jignasya. Now is the time to understand Brahma, to inquire, to look into, to search out, to understand what is Brahma. So Brahma is the important factor, because as Krishna says, that the living entities, they are my part and parcel. So that means they are Brahman. He doesn't say the living entities are earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and they are in me and they are mine. Does he? He doesn't say that. He doesn't say anything about earth, water. He says the living entities, they are mine. They are my part and parcels, and they are in me, and they are mine. So in other words, the living entity has all the qualities of God. See, we should understand this. It's very scientific philosophy. And at the moment, those qualities are actually pervertedly manifested. They're perverted. They're perverted on account of supernatural force. So this supernatural force, this is the Devihi Esugunamayi. Devihi, Krishna says, Devihi Esugunamayi. Mama Maya Dharatyaya. So this Devi is divine. It's a spiritual force. It's not a material force. There is no such thing as matter in the kingdom of God. Because everything that comes from God is God. Understand this point very clearly. Everything that comes from God is God. Okay? Because the energy of the energetic are one and the same. This is the meaning of achintya bheda bheda tattva. Simultaneously, inconceivably one and different. In other words, Prabhupada gives the example that a perfect engineer, he can make electricity to be hot, or he can make it to be cold. You see, he is the perfect engineer. In other words, he knows the science of making the electricity hot or making it cold. Similarly, Krishna knows the science of making his energy material or making it spiritual. And when Krishna wants matter to be spirit, it's spirit. And when he wants spirit to be matter, it's matter. Prabhupada said this is his actual potency, that he can actually create the illusion that his energy is actually material. In the sense, material sense, Prabhupada said Maya means to separate something from Krishna. As soon as you separate from Krishna, that is Maya. So you can even separate something spiritual from Krishna. You see? You can even separate something spiritual from Krishna. And Prabhupada gives a very nice example of that. He says, in the even by regular attendance of the Bhagavatam, one by regularly hearing of the Bhagavatam and rendering services unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to heart becomes practically destroyed almost to nil. The Prabhupada said, why almost to nil? Why not completely to nil? Can anyone answer that? Why not completely to nil? So Prabhupada explains, because by regularly hearing the Bhagavatam and rendering service to the pure devotee, you actually get some potency. You become potent. Isn't it? This is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, because by that regularly hearing, one becomes free from the influence of the modes of tamas and raja, and therefore actually starts to become purified. And when you become purified, you then start to become actually a little powerful. You see? That's why you get these devotees. I know many devotees that when they came to the movement, they were completely and utterly, to use a very bad expression, but they were spaced out of their brain. Couldn't even walk straight somewhere. We used to have to go looking for them in a hurry now. I'm not joking. And now, they're big sannyasi gurus. The same persons. They couldn't even put their socks on. You see? So therefore, there's that tendency, but Prabhupada said, don't become proud. That is the point. That is the meaning of almost to know, that one can very easily become proud. That actually, oh look, I've now got some shakti, so let me use that to bang Krishna on the head. You see, that's the nature of the living entity. They always want to be independent. We're all envious of Krishna. So as soon as we get anything, we want to make our distinction from Krishna. We want to make our stand. We want to make some separation from Krishna. So this separation of Krishna, this is one of the great dangers. That's why Krishna says that, he says in the Bhagavad Gita that by the Vedas I am to be known. But at the same time, I am the compiler of the Vedas. So the important thing there is that Prabhupada is explaining here that the living entity, without performing devotional service, cannot put his faith in Lord Krishna. He cannot put his faith in Lord Krishna, because there will always be some influence or contamination of illusionary energy, supernatural force. It is said in the Brahma Samhita that Durga stands with 10 tritons. I might even be able to find that verse. She stands with 10 tritons, and those are the 10 directions. So when the living entity tries to approach Krishna in any of those directions, she cuts him asunder with her trident. So if you try to approach Krishna on the mental direction, you come in on a mental plane, okay, I'm going to get Krishna here, and come in like that. But actually she's there to protect Krishna, so she'll cut you asunder on the mental plane. If you try to move in on the intellectual plane, she'll get you there. Maya apritya jnana. You know that word? Maya apritya jnana. Maya apritya jnana. Apritya means that which is stolen by illusion. Apritya jnana. It appears to be knowledge, but it's not. That's why in India, 90% practically of Vedantists are Mayavadis, impersonalists. Some contamination is there. Vaishnavas are very, very rare. To become Vaishnava is actually very, very rare, because Maya is always putting in something. You see? Even when the living entity finally comes to the conclusion that I should get out of the material world, the Maya says, yes, you must get out of the material world. You must. And here is Shastra. Take shelter of Shastra. That will get you out of the material world. And then what does she do? She moves into the Shastra and gives little interpretations, little variations, a little bit of adjustment here, a little bit of adjustment there. And then they say, oh yes, actually Krishna means I am God. That's what he's saying. Just like Prabhupada said in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna quotes that verse, what is that verse? Prabhupada quotes, when Krishna quotes that verse, and then Bhakti Radha Krishna says that he doesn't mean Krishna. Oh yeah, that's the actual Sarvadharma Pratyajna. And he said, actually it doesn't mean surrender unto Krishna, he means to surrender to the unmanifested, unborn within Krishna. That's what you surrender. The Prabhupada said, you can see, that even though There are so many interpretations, so many studies of the Bhagavad Gita, so many studies of Krishna, but they have all failed to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna. And that's why Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavad Gita purport, when Krishna says, Jamma karma chamed divyam, evam yo veti tattva. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains to my eternal abode, or Arjuna. So the Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is already explained in the sixth verse. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from material bondage. And therefore he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting his present material body. Such liberation of the living entity from the material bondage is not at all easy. So this is the important thing, that to get out of the material clutches is not easy. It's not going to be easy. It's not just by some sort of adjustment that you're going to get out. It is not possible to make an adjustment to get out of Maya's kingdom. Just like when you're in prison. Ravi, have you ever been in prison? No. Well, when you're in prison, you are under a supernatural force in that sense. Relatively speaking, the force of the prison authority is very powerful. You see? It's a force. And if you try to say, for instance, you decide to go on walkies at 12 o'clock at night, and you decide to go out and have a nice walk around the prison. But the thing is, you can't, because wherever way you move, you are restricted. You are restricted, you see? So that restriction, the restrictive energy, that is Maya. Maya is there to restrict you. And if you notice, the one thing that we all are is restricted. It doesn't matter who you are on this planet, whether you're President Clinton, or whether you're a big this, or a small gun, or whether you're a big actor, or a very multi-billionaire, everyone is restricted. Isn't it, Ravi? Restricted. So what is restriction? Ravi will explain what restriction is. Very good. It's a limitation. It's something else also. What is restriction? It's a force. Exactly. Somebody else is a controller. That's exactly what restriction is. Somebody else is the controller. That is the most important point to understand in all philosophy. You see, that is the difference between I'm the controller and I'm not. This is the first principle one must come to in philosophy. Because if you're the controller, then you don't need God. You don't need religion. You don't need any kind of path. You don't need any kind of method. You see? So unless you come to that understanding that I am not the controller, that I am being controlled. And that's why the Bhagavatam, in the cantos, the whole reason for the first cantos of Bhagavatam is to make you understand that you're not the controller. You see? That's why Krishna begins in the Bhagavad Gita by making Arjuna understand what? What does he make him understand in the first instance? That you're not the body. Exactly, you see? As soon as you realize you're not the body, then you know that there's some other thing going on. There's something going on here, you see? It's very, very important. You cannot come to the point of understanding philosophy or Krishna consciousness until you understand that you're not that body. Because if you don't understand you're not that body, then you don't understand that there's some other control going on. You see, you think that you got the body. I got it. It's me. It's mine. I am mine. So therefore, it's not something alien to you. It's something very much you. You see? You don't understand that you're being implicated in karma, krodha, karma esha, krodha esha, Rajaguna, that living entity has to understand that I am being subjugated to Sattvam Rajas Tamati. Guna Prakriti, meaning of guna means that one is bound by the quality. Guna also means rope. One is bound. So we must come to understanding that every single thing that goes on in our physical and psychological makeup is all controlled by higher authority. We actually have no independent jurisdiction over that authority. So therefore we are 100% the servant of supernatural force. You understand this point? So this is a very important point to understand, because the problem is when we study Krishna's pastimes, we think, oh, he's also in the same position. Just see, he is, because the previous verses to this are explaining about Krishna's conjugal affairs with the queens and the walker. So, oh yeah, yeah. So many people are attracted to the idea of Krishna because, yeah, well, he was really good, wasn't he? I mean, you know, he had all these wives and lovers and, you know, so they see like that. They're attracted that actually Krishna is some sort of powerful personality who was doing a lot more of what we are doing, and he was doing it even better. That's the subtle kind of contamination of this mundane reader of the Bhagavatam, or the mundane reader of Krishna's pastimes. What we're thinking is that the same thing that we're doing, only he's doing it even better than us. He's got 16,108 wives. We can only get one or two or a few. I know there's one sheikh in Saudi, in Kuwait. He gets a new wife every Thursday. I don't know why Thursday, but every Thursday he tries to get a new wife. But it's horrible. So therefore, people, when they study the pastimes of the Lord, they immediately try to relate them, because we're living in this relative realm. Therefore, we want to bring Krishna within our jurisdiction, within our subjugation. Just like the criminal when he's in the cell. Here's another one in here, you see? It's natural. When you're in a cell and someone else comes into prison, you think, aha, who's in now? What are you in for? You see? It's an enviousness. You understand the point? This type of enviousness is that the other criminal has come. So you're thinking, well, what's he in for? Oh, he's in for 25 years. So they get all excited. That's great. They love to hear that because they're envious. You see? So the nature also, when we study Krishna's pastime, because of our envy, we want to bring Krishna as being in the same situation as us. So therefore, Krishna's pastimes are very, very difficult to understand because they are divyam. You see, what is the meaning of divyam? Vince, divyam. Transcendental, exactly. Because Krishna's pastimes are all transcendental. So therefore, whenever he appears, yidāyidāhi dharmasya, he comes for many, many reasons, but they're all transcendental. None of them are under any subjugation whatsoever. Prabhupada says, what we call the laws of nature are simply what's the word Prabhupada uses? They are simply the, basically they are simply the desires of Krishna. He uses a particular word. But what we call the laws of nature are actually Krishna's desires. Just like you've got desires. And if you're a very big businessman, you create a business according to your desires. If you want everyone to clock in at a certain time, isn't it? If you've got a big business, just like Ravi's father has the hairdressers, and he was saying how he arranged a meeting and they all had to be there at a certain time, and everyone was late. So he sent them all home again. You see, he's a big man, it's his business. If he doesn't want you to come late, then you go home. And if you're late the next time, he tells you don't bother coming again. Because he's a powerful man, you understand, in relative terms. So a big businessman, what you call the working conditions of the business, they are the desire of the director of the business. You understand that principle? They are his desire, what you call the working conditions. So what you do is when you go to get a job, you find out the conditions by which you're going to work on it. And that's the agreement. That's called the agreement. So similarly, in the material world, the living entity is living on a certain condition. But those conditions are actually Krishna's desire. They're Krishna's pastimes. So therefore, to understand that the Lord is the... just like Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, everything is resting on me as pearls are strung on a thread. You see, just like when you string pearls on a thread, everything is resting on Krishna in that same way. Nothing actually moves without the sanction of Krishna. Every time you blink your eyes, are you blinking your eyes there, Mick? Or are they closed? So every time you move your eyes, it is by Krishna's personal sanction. This is the inconceivable nature of the Lord. Every time, every single thing that you do is personally sanctioned by Krishna through his multivarious energies. Adwaita Achutyam and Adam Ananta Rupam. That the Lord is Adwaita Achuta. The meaning of Adwaita means non-dual. There is no duality in the Lord's creation. It is all Kavaila. There is oneness. But their oneness, they think that oneness means that there's no diversity. No. Actually, Achintya Beta Beta Tapa means diversity and oneness. In other words, there's unlimited diversity. But all of that diversity is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he is one, and yet he is unlimitedly diverse. That is a much more wonderful explanation of God. Because unlimited... stand up, Prabhu, come on. You haven't heard one word, Prabhu. You stand up, sit up. See, if you fall asleep, stand up, make some effort. Otherwise, you're drifting in and out, all across. So, therefore, where was it? I was saying something. Anyway, see, this disturbs me in the sleep. I'm trying to speak and then I get disturbed. So the point is that the, Advaita Machutya Manana Mananta Rupam. So this Advaitya, this oneness, is very important to understand. That actually all of this energy is being conducted under the internal energy. Therefore Krishna says, Devi Iye Suguna Mayi. It is all under Krishna's Devi energy, his divine energy of mind. Why does he say divine energy? Why does he say divine energy? Because it is his personal energy. Everything is resting on me. You see? Krishna says, everything is resting on me. He says, everything is in me. And it is mine. So it is very, very important to understand that every single thing that happens to you as a devotee is directly under the supervision of Krishna. So therefore, if you try to approach Krishna with any contamination, you will not get anywhere. You see? Because Krishna says, yeya mam prapadyante. As they surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. So as you surrender to Krishna, Krishna will reward. And if you have any little motivation, then you will become distracted from that surrender to Krishna. So it is very, very important to study the nature of Krishna, to understand that when Krishna is enjoying in Vrindavan, when Krishna is enjoying in Dwarka, when Krishna is enjoying with the queens of Dwarka, that these are all divyam. They're all transcendental activities. It is not that Krishna is in need of anything, or is that he, like us, in some sort of perverted relationship. We are in a perverted state of consciousness, and therefore we are being subjugated to the modes of Raja and Tamas. So therefore we are acting under those modes. We are not divyam, we are not transcendental. We are acting according to the modes. When the mode says that you have to do something, then you do them. You see, you are being subjugated. But these pastimes of Krishna when he appears in the material world, they are not subjugation of any energy. They are totally and utterly unrestricted, unconditional, unlimited pastimes. So when you hear that Krishna had 900,000 cows, and you think, my God, how could he have that many cows? Or that he used to give away 10,000 cows every day. You see, immediately the mind is very difficult to understand that. And yet at the same time, the same people, when they hear that Krishna had so many wives, just see, Prabhachi. You see? So in other words, they're bewildered in every way with Krishna's pastimes. Actually, if Krishna wanted, he could have 55 trillion wives. And he could live with them all inside of an area the size of a peanut. Yes, If he wants, he can do anything. That is the point to understand about God. He can do anything and everything. There are no restrictions because he doesn't live within dimensions. Krishna is not living within a three-dimensional time and space. He doesn't have to worry about the width or the breadth or the area by which, when Krishna appears in the material world, he brings all his transcendental energies and he displays unlimited pastimes. Actually unlimited. Just like when Krishna was in Dwarka, he had all the Brahmas from every single universe. Now Prabhupada says, there are as many universes as there are pebbles on the ocean. Just like if you go and see the sand. You want to go and see the sand on the beach. So you pick up one little grain of sand, okay? Well, if you were to try to calculate all of those grains, that would give you an idea how many universes there are. Now, he had all the Brahmas from every single universe come and visit him in his room in the Dwarka. And it says that each Brahma was inconceivably bigger than the others. It was like, this Brahma is the smallest Brahma in this universe. So every Brahma was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It says the poor old Brahma in this universe, he ended up in the corner of the room. There was no room for him, you see? Because these other Brahmas were much more powerful than him. Because in this universe there is so many directions. In other universes, as they get bigger, the universes get more and more incredible. The actual dimensional capacity. Anyway, this is all something unusual. But the point being made is that each Brahma was under the impression that the Lord was actually calling him to see him. Anyway, it's very, very difficult to understand. You can't even try and comprehend the Lord's pastime. But the point is that this is the meaning of Divyam. So that's why it says in this verse, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. Janma karma means that one who can understand my birth and work. Janma karma means my birth and activities. Who can understand them to be divya. Anyone who knows vetitatvata. Vetitatvata means anyone who knows the truth of these pastimes. Then he does not take birth again in this material world because he actually becomes divya himself. You can only know the transcendental by being transcendental. You cannot know Krishna's pastime by being within the material modes of nature. Krishna is not approachable by the mode of Raja or Tamas. If there's any little tint of contamination of Raja or Tama, any little contamination, you will not know Krishna. You have to be completely on the stage of Sudasattva. Not Sattva. Sattva is goodness, but Sudasattva means that you're actually pure goodness. So therefore, actually it becomes very, very difficult to approach the Lord's pastime. That's why, and I'm going to finish off by reading some verses from the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam explains this in the beginning of the Bhagavatam when the sages were explaining I'll just go through this very quickly. I'll read some verses. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. You see, this is very important, who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other? That one should be 100% attentive. Now why would you be attentive to something? Sorry? Exactly, because you have an interest in that thing. Because you actually have some enthusiasm, utsahan. I want to know this thing. Devotees should try to become, I want to understand this. Not that I'm some clone, that I'm some moron who joined the Hare Krishna movement, that I move my arm when they say move their arm, and I move my head when they say move their head. No, we're not here to become morons or to become clones. We're here to become enthusiastic to understand Krishna. We should be enthusiastic. We should be. It says that Lord Chaitanya's Bhagavatam was completely destroyed by his crying in ecstasy, where he was going through the Bhagavatam constantly, enjoying the nectarine pastimes of the Lord. And because he was in so much ecstasy reading it, the tears were pouring from his eyes onto the book, so that when he gave it to Gadadhar to read, he couldn't even read it. There was nothing left of it. So he gave him an order that you take this and read it. And Gadadhar was looking and saying, oh, I can't see anything. It's all been obliterated by his tears. This is what is required. You see, this is what is required. Not that we have some sentimental idea that Krishna is very nice, he has nice dhoti, and I'll touch his dhoti, and I'll rub against his dhoti, and I'll be very happy ever after. This is not our philosophy. Or, oh, this morning Krishna's playing his flute. Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Hello, Krishna, you're playing your flute? Just like one devotee I heard in Belfast going down. I'm going to go down and take photos of those rascals on the altar. We're not on this level. We should not make such a sentimental rubbish. Rather, we should understand exactly who is Krishna. And that can take a whole lifetime of study. So when you finish the nine cantos of Bhagavatam, when you've completely understood those, then you can enter into ten canto. And only then, Prabhupada says. Not that you simply think like monkey, Prabhupada says, jumping over, jumping over, jumping over. Oh, I don't want to understand these things. These are all very technical. Or they're all very mundane. I want to actually go. I want to jump into Krishna's dhoti. I want to see, oh, can I touch Krishna's dhoti? This is the sahajya mentality. That I want to enjoy conjugal. I'm on the conjugal ras, Prabhu. I'm not on those lower rasas. I'm moving in the higher plane. Today I'm going with Radharani to get Krishna flowers. Me and Radharani are going together. Don't be thinking like that. It happens. It happens. Even in our movement, this thing is there that, oh, I've chanted so many rounds, I've followed so many principles, I've read so many books. Now all I'm worried about is, where is Krishna today? And I go and grab his dhoti. Hang on to Krishna's dhoti. No, Prabhupada says this is the ruination of our Krishna consciousness. Actually, that's why Lord Chaitanya said this prayer. Mami jamani jamani ishpare. Mami jamani jamani means birth after birth I will come. But I will always simply be craving your service. I am not worthy to be even the dust particles in your feet. This is the understanding of God. And I'm not worthy to be even the dust particles at your feet. You see? Not that we simply, just because we read, oh, Krishna's doing like that, oh yes, this, I'm very much in tune with all this. I can relate to this. This is my rasa with Krishna. Just like one devotee was here, he was, just to show you an example, I won't mention him, but he was bewildered because Prabhupada said one coward boy wore a certain color, and that's not mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami, that he wore that color. And I said to him, how would you know what anyone does in Vrindavan? You've not seen. But Prabhupada has. That's the difference. If he says that coward boy wears a coconut on his head, then that's what he does. Don't try and understand by your, because I've read a book of Rupa Goswami, therefore I know Vrindavan. Follow the acharyas. Try and understand that Krishna's pastimes are all divyam. And when you are divyam, then you can say, I can now enter into pastime. But we're not divyam. So when you're divya means when you're 100% free from all contaminations of matter. That means when you have no more material desires, when you're completely free from any influences on the mental plane or the physical plane. Then when you're, Prabhupada said, when you're like the Goswamis, when you're running around like a madman, when you're chasing like that, then you can start to understand the transcendental pastime of the Lord. But the important thing to understand is these pastimes are only approachable by devotional service. So therefore, jamani jamani ishwari, that I always want birth after birth, I simply want your devotional service in my life, birth after birth. That is the prayer of Lord Chaitanya. That is the currency for getting Krishna. Prabhupada said, don't try to understand or see Krishna like that. particularly to see Krishna. He said, do something that Krishna will see you. That's the nature of bhakti yoga. We are not trying to be intellectuals or big mental speculators or big yogis or big renunciates. We simply want to do something that will attract Krishna. That's all our longing, life after life after life. Maybe in this lifetime I'll just do something that will attract Krishna. Maybe Krishna, if I do this in a very humble attitude, that this will be attractive. And Prabhupada said, just like in a big company, even the sweeper of the toilet, the cleaner of the toilet, if they clean it very nicely and the company director comes in there, immediately he's attractive. Who has done such a nice job? Then Prabhupada said, you will be called to the office. Bring me this cleaner. You see? And then as soon as the cleaner comes, oh, thank you very much for being so aware of the importance of cleaning the toilets. You see? But if the cleaner suddenly tries to be the managing director's personal assistant and comes in with her brooms and mops and whatever, I now promoted myself to your personal assistant, smelling of, what is that stuff, the bleach. Then he'll say, get out of here, mad, crazy person. You see? So similarly, if we try to approach Krishna by our intellectualism or our mental speculation or any kind of mundane characteristic that is already being produced by the supernatural force of Maya, everything we got, we should understand, is the creation of Maya. Just like one devotee said to Prabhupada, sometimes Srila Prabhupada, sometimes I get into Maya. Sometimes? Well, you are in Maya 24 hours a day. What is this, sometimes I get into terrible Maya? So the point is that we are always in Maya. We are always utterly helpless. We're always utterly helpless under the influence of Maya. But we are simply, Prabhupada says, crying like a child. One should cry like a child for the protection of Krishna. That is the reason that Maya means also affection. That the material energy is there to subjugate us to all sorts of humiliations. We are actually being humiliated at all times by the material energy. Isn't it? If you look at your material body, it has 9 holes, and out of every single hole, something humiliating and disgusting comes out. Isn't it? It's humiliating. The whole body itself is nothing but a dead lump of flesh which is producing all sorts of bad smells and bad excretions. That is the reality. So therefore it's very embarrassing. You should be embarrassed that you've got such a terrible condition to live in. Just like if someone comes to your apartment and it's full of all sorts of mucus and stool and urine and bile and bad air, wouldn't you be embarrassed? You would be embarrassed. I'm sorry to bring you into such a horrible mess, but I live here. This is where I live. So the soul is residing in a body of 9 holes. And all that's coming out of those 9 holes is horrible excrements. But still we are thinking this is very nice. Just because, why? Because we have nice soft skin, something like that. Because the skin is nice and tight. You know, just like I was reading in a book, it has a little book about that I found in Ravi's house, about the wonderful nature of the body. And it says that there's 30 muscles on the face, just to give it expression. 30 muscles on the face, which are all attached to the skull, just to give it some sort of shape. So your looks are depending upon 30 muscles moving the right way. And when you get older, the muscles don't move the right way anymore. So if you look at old people, that's why they tend to look like their face are very puffy. You notice that? They become very puffy and they don't move the right way anymore. The muscles have loosened up. So all of this is just a big machine of illusion. So therefore, instead of being so proud of our pathetic situation in this material world, instead of being so proud that I have a very nice situation here, one should become Trinadapi Sunichena. One should become very humble. Just like Vasudeva Datta, he had worms eating his body. Little worms, and one fell off. He used to pick them up when it fell off and put them back. Because he didn't want to deprive him of his food. He considered his body was only fit to be the foodstuffs for this worm. That's humility. That is humility. When you actually realize that this body is, all your body is foodstuff for other worms. When you die, your body is going to immediately be taken over by all the little creatures inside it that are just waiting to get a bite of you. That's why when people die, all these little creatures come out of them. It's a fact. Even if you put them in a metal box, they'll still come out because they're in there. You've got loads of little creatures in there ready to eat you up as soon as the time is right. So therefore, that is the nature of this material world. We are, the example Prabhupada uses is that there's a man in the jungle being chased by a tiger. And he's suddenly, just as he's about to fall into an elephant pit, you know where the elephants fall in the jungle, they put these big spears. And Prabhupada said, in this elephant pit, there's all these snakes at the bottom. Just as he's about to fall in, he leaps up and catches a branch of a tree. But on the branch of the tree, there's a woodpecker, and he's pecking away at this branch. And the he's going like that. This pecker's pecking away. And there's a whacking great snake coming down onto the same branch at the same time. So below him, he's got this pit full of snakes and spears all sticking up. And he's hanging onto this branch, and the woodpecker's pecking away, and the snake's on his way over to give him a bite. But Prabhupada said there's a little pot of honey on the branch above him, and it's dripping into his mouth. And actually, as it's dripping into his mouth, he's thinking, oh, this is very nice honey. This is very nice honey. You see? So he's thinking like that. So that's our nature in the material world. We are in a very precarious situation. We are tottering on a very fragile plane of existence. At any moment we can go. We are in all sorts of precarious situations. We are going to be eaten by worms and all sorts of things if we're buried or whatever. The body is already being occupied by all sorts of other entities inside us, eating us away. And at the same time, there's little taste there. So we're thinking, actually, I'm having a great time. You see? Because the honey is there, little honey is there. So anyway, we'll stop here. Actually, what do we want? Is there any questions at all? Anybody have any questions? Sorry. About what? Yeah, yeah. 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 Yeah, anytime you burn anything, you're killing the living entity. But I mean, you know, it depends how, I mean, the reason we cremate is because the attachment the soul has to the body, the subtle body has to the gross body. Sometimes if you don't cremate, well, generally it's recommended to cremate, because if you don't cremate, then the actual consciousness, the subtle consciousness sticks around the body, you become ghost. You can take ghost body. Yeah, because you're leaving your body and you don't want to go. And the body's still there. That's why you always find the story of graveyards having all these ghosts. Because what they're trying to do is get their bodies back. If someone took away your body, wouldn't you want it back? So the point is that when we lose our body, we still have attachment to the body. So there's a great danger once you die that you'll hang around. That's why they have to do all these pujas and you have to do all these purificatory rites to free the soul, to let it go on. Otherwise, if you don't let it go on, it'll stick around. And then it'll be stuck in that ghosty atmosphere. So, therefore, you burn the body. But some religions, they don't burn the body. In the Parsi religion, they feed it to the vultures. So you can actually do that also in the sense that if it's eaten right away, I wouldn't say if it's eaten by fire, of course. The fire also purifies the whole atmosphere. But I wouldn't worry about killing a few insects in the body, because generally when the body dies, they may eat the body, but they'll also die. You know, they'll also die. You worried about the... Yeah, karmically, I don't know. I mean, I would say that the body, everything in the material world is occupied by someone. You know, and we're all living in a transitory apartment, so you get kicked out of your apartment and they have to go with you. It's like, you know, just like if you're staying with a friend and he gets kicked out of his flat, then you got to go with him. So when you have to leave your body, maybe they got to go as well. But you can send them a message of goodwill. So I'm very sorry for you. In your will, you can have it that they can eat you for a few while before you go in the body or something. Yeah. That's the main thing also. If you're following Shastra, you become karmic. You become free. Any other questions, or is that it? Okay, Srimad Bhagavatam Mahapuram Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.